This is Jim Duffy interviewing Mr. Benjamin Castor on May the 12th, 1975, at approximately 8 o'clock in the evening. We're going to be talking about Mr. Castor's experiences in World War I in France. Okay, Ben, could you give us some biographical information about your life up to the time that you joined the service in World War I?
Well, my father was a huckster, fruit peddler. In those days, horse and wagon, no automobiles. And I used to help out on the huckster wagon, wrapped door to door with a basket in my hand, selling bananas, what have you, bananas, 8-10 cents a dozen. They sold them by the hand, by the dozen. Prior to that, as a kid, this was at the age of, possibly 10, 12 years old. And around that time, I used to be a downtown boy. Poor people, and I used to hang around the pool rooms downtown, learning the ways of the streets, had my experiences shooting pool, scrounging hard liquor from the end of a bar in the saloons, which wasn't too hard to get at 10 cents a throw. And then huckstering, as I said before, on the huckster wagon with my dad. Who was known as Honest Dave. And I can remember of we used to keep our horse in a barn about a half a block away on Foster Street. We rented a barn, $1 a month, if I remember correctly. And I can remember one year, and horses were for poor people, immigrant people like our family, horses were as hard to come by as automobiles are today for poor people, not in the money. And I can remember one day being sent over to feed the horses, to feed the horse, not horses, but only one horse. And done that quite a few times. Then I remember, as I say, one day going over there to being sent over to give our horse oats for the evening. I left the oat bin open, and the horse got out and got into the oat bin and overfed himself. And a horse, as you may or may not know, is not a very bright animal as a rule. And he continued to eat till he overfed himself and became bloated. And my father discovered this the next morning when he went out to hitch him up for the day's business. And that was a sad week for the Castor family. They took the horse, I remember, out along the avenue and run him up and down in the hope that his bowels would work, that there would be a movement to his bowels and he would be able to empty the oats that he had eaten, overeaten. But such wasn't the case, and the horse died. And that was a real sad occasion for the Castor family. And how we came to get another horse, I can't quite fully remember, but it was through the efforts of a church agency that enough dollars was raised to get another horse so we could maintain our livelihood instead of being recipients for charity.
Did you go to school?
And in those years, about that time, I attended what was known as, well, prior to that time, when I was, it just doesn't come back to me. We lived on Poland Avenue at that time, corner of Poland Avenue and Cedar Street, which wasn't too bad a neighborhood. But a poor house in that neighborhood. And I can remember of the Mahoning River overflowing practically every year and running us out of our downstairs kitchen. The kitchen was downstairs. And for days sometimes we had to get along the best we could on the street level, which was the second floor of the Poland Avenue residence. And these floods occurred pretty regular each year because Poland Avenue at this spot was right on the banks of the Mahoning River. And as I say, it wasn't too poor a neighborhood, but we were on the poor side of the street, which made the difference, because there's where the floods occurred every year. And on the good side of the street, the better off side of the street, there was such names as, the one that comes to my mind is Kane. He was a policeman at that time, which was quite a standing in the community. And later he became a detective. And a little further down on the right side of the street also was a brother of his, I assume. I can remember this, although I didn't know them too well, called Piggy Kane. Due to the fact, not that he was, although I didn't know him too well, but he raised pigs and was called Piggy Kane. And further down the street, now this is Poland Avenue. Further down the street, about six blocks, lived the mayor of the town, a mayor at one time. Gibson was his name, Mayor Gibson. He was a fine gentleman, as I understood, just being a youngster. And the thing that sticks out in memory is that in front of his house, on about the sidewalk point of his home, which was a lovely home for those days, was a natural spring, water spring, which people used to come up and get buckets of water out of the spring. The water was excellent. It was known for its water. And this was in front of his house at about the sidewalk level. And there was a cast iron, about the size of a little larger than, say, rather than speak in terms of feet or what have you, I'd say about the size of a coffin, cast iron. The water would be coming continually into this cast iron trough, was the expression that we would use day and night, all the time, never shut off. It was a natural spring, came from further back of Gibson's home, which was a hill in back of You went up the hill, possibly a mile or so, and then you run into South Avenue. Poland Avenue and South Avenue would be running about the same way as Poland Avenue. And we used to go down there and drink out of that. People used to come and get pails of water at no charge. It was free. The mayor, not the mayor, I don't know whether he was mayor at that time or not, but he was a mayor. The wagon traffic used to drive up there. If you'd come by in a buggy or a wagon with a horse or a team of horses, they would pull up off slightly off the road and allow the horses to drink out of the steel trough.
How old were you about this time?
My age at that time, possibly about 7 or 8 years old.
You mentioned to me that you'd gone to school for about
now,
4 years.
We get to the school part. Not 4 years, approximately 7, 8 months. Now, I can't be too sure of the time. I wasn't very bright. I was bright in the ways of the street. And living by your wits, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Within the law, in a legal manner, because today, living by our wits, there's a reflection on it that's not, that could be so-so. And I can remember of going to school, I'd walk down Poland Avenue, and I'd meet this former mayor or mayor's daughter at the time, whose name was Dorothy Gibson. And if there's such a thing as affection or love, at that age, Dorothy was my girl. Yeah, although there was no such thing as going out at night or anything like that. But it was a highlight in my life, a point of distinction, that Dorothy and I got along very well together. Not after hours, but during school, on my way to school and from school. And we'd go up through the orchard. Those were orchards where there wasn't homes at that end of Poland Avenue. They was orchards. And we'd cut through an apple orchard and walk through the field about half a mile or three quarters of a mile to South Avenue, where the school was. And the school, I don't know now just whereabouts on South Avenue it was, but it seems to me that it would have been, I think I'm fairly accurate in this, would have been on Williamson and South Avenue. The South Avenue School, it was called. The grades, I believe, run up to 6 or 7. And if I'm not mistaken, the building stood for, years and years afterwards, idle, empty. Yes, the school was on the corner of Williamson Avenue and South Avenue. I'm positive of that now.
How old were you at the time that you attended school?
Well, about 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the grade, but that I was in the school. But it wasn't very high. You could count it on half the fingers of one hand, I'm pretty sure.
Why did you finally leave school?
Well, we moved out of Poland Avenue after some years. And we moved, from there we moved to, I'm not sure, but I think it was North Avenue. 421 North Avenue.
Now that's off of...
North Avenue runs parallel to Belmont or Wick. or Foster Street. Now, wait a minute. No, no. Yes, we moved to North Avenue, 421 North Avenue. And if I may digress for a moment, the old home in which we lived, rented, many years later, became a Elks, Colored Elks club rooms, which I think it is to this day. I'm not too sure, but I still think it is.
Yeah.
In the corner of Arlington Street and North Avenue. Yeah. But in those days, that wasn't too bad a neighborhood either. Down below us, about three blocks, right at the railroad tracks, just before crossing over to Federal Street, West Federal Street. That's where the New York Central station is, right at the present time. Used to be an old car barns, streetcars, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And at the foot of North Avenue was the Burley, B-U-H-E-R-L-E, German people. Burley Brothers, grain and feed store. Grain and feed, hay, oats, corn, and feed. I can remember going down there and buying 50 cents worth of oats any number of occasions for the horse until I permitted him to overfeed himself. And some years later, the Youngstown Towel Supply moved into the corner of, took a building right near the corner of North Avenue and Rayan Avenue, which isn't too far from what is commonly called today, or some years back, the Monkey's Nest, or Westlake's Crossing. That's the gender right on the Benton.
422.
It's Girard, yeah. You know.
What?
Now, there's another landmark that I should mention here that was on the corner of Rayan Avenue, one of the old establishments of the Youngstown, the city of Youngstown, was the Thornton Laundry. It was quite a big plant in those days. They done laundry work, dry cleaning, as it was, such as it was in those days, and the laundry work, washing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in my 10-year-old age period, I assume, I imagine. And at that time, I went to Covington Street School from South Avenue. I left South Avenue. I can't just remember the grade I was in. And I honestly can't be too sure of the grade I was in Covington Street. Covington Street School. And how long I went there, don't know. Just how long. But it seems to me then that the family bettered itself in a way. Now, incidentally, these neighborhoods are not to be classed in the same position as neighborhoods are today for the same area, see.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we lived on North Avenue, people by the name of Callan. There was Jackie Callan. He was a prize fighter. There was John Callan. He was a fireman. And a block east from us on the corner of Belmont Avenue and Arlington Street was John Cantwell. On a higher level family, better grade. All these people that I mentioned were on a higher level than we were at the time.
Were they?
They were more established in their mode of living and their length of living in this country and in the neighborhood.
Most of these people were established here long before your family had come.
We were immigrants.
Yeah.
Not strictly off the boat, mm-hmm. but in the secondary stage.
Yeah. Well, how about your years, in your teen years? Is there anything there that you can remember that you might want to relate to leading up to the time that you joined the Army?
Well, first I want to mention that from North Avenue, we moved to Grant Street, to a house on Grant Street. We lived there, and I attended Elm Street School on the corner of Elm Street and Grant Street, mm-hmm. only for a short period of time. Now, as a boy getting into the teenage category now, class, there wasn't too much to do in those days. I did work for a time for the towel supply, the Youngstown Towel Supply, as a driver, and duties were to load up the wagon in the morning, with towels, small towels, today would be about the size of a face towel, what they called wipes, W-I-P-E-S. Mm-hmm. And we'd drive down, I would drive down along after I broke into the route, which they only broke in for a day in them days. It was a get out and do the job. Would go to the confectionery ice cream parlors, which was the big thing, and saloons, which was the bigger thing, and replenish the wipes, pick up the old ones and give them a supply of clean ones. And I worked for a short time at that. And a little bit later, let me see, that's when I worked for the clothing store on Federal Street. Or was it before that? What was the position there? Well, I can't take me too long to think back on much of it, but that was some of the jobs that I had. Mm-hmm. And then some years later, I had a brother-in-law that was a shoemaker. Now this was after I got out of the Army. This was after I got out of the Army. Scrounged enough, worked as a shoe salesman, was a shoemaker, Sam Levy was his name, fine gentleman. But that's a brother-in-law. He's from Scranton. And incidentally, I just run across the card upstairs. No, I didn't break it down. My brother-in-law, Dan, managed to open a shoe store on East Federal Street. He had quit the shoe repair business and got a job as a shoe clerk with Abe Brody and Sons on East Federal Street. Well-known figure on East Federal Street, well-known Youngstoner. Good class shoe store. And he'd got a job there, and he'd met up with another fellow by the name of I. Pressman, who worked in a shoe store on West Federal Street. And after a number of years, they got together and decided that they would open a shoe store through information gathered from a traveling shoe salesman from St. Louis, the Buster Brown Shoe Company. The salesman represented the Buster Brown Shoe Company from St. Louis, Missouri. And he was anxious to open new accounts and get more business. In those days, business wasn't so, there wasn't too much to be had. So he told these two men, my brother-in-law and this other man, High Pressman, Isidore Pressman, or Ike, I forget what it was, about a town that really could use another shoe store, and especially the shoes that actually didn't have no need for another shoe store, but he needed to put out to sell more shoes, and naturally would want to sell more shoes, so he sold them on the idea of opening a Buster Brown, which I have a picture upstairs, a Buster Brown shoe store in Ashtabula, on Main Street in Ashtabula, on the lower end of Main Street near the Ashtabula post office at that time. And they decided to open the shoe store there. And for some reason or other, I had just left the towel supply company. Now, whether they fired me or whether I quit is a moot question. Chances are they fired me or laid me off. I don't think they fired me. There was some reason for it. They were discontinuing the wipes is what it was. On the, I had no need for an extra horse and wagon for the Federal Street route of the wipes. And I went to Ashtabula. My brother-in-law asked me to come to Ashtabula, and I stood at their home. And they opened their shoe store on Main Street in Ashtabula. And I went to work for them for nothing a week, learning the shoe business, to sell shoes. And I worked for them for several years. And met my wife in Ashtabula. She was going to school at the time. And I'd spend my time at the American Legion Hall on Main Street. And I'd look out the window on the Main Street when I wasn't working, and I would watch the kids come from school. I think it was a high school, which was at the end of Main Street, the Ashtabula High School. Yeah, that was, because she went to school at in Windermere, where they lived on the west end of Ashtabula. And I spotted this chick coming from school and kind of liked the way she walked. And nosied down one day along Main Street and got acquainted with her. She'd come from school about that time. And that's how I met my wife.
How did you eventually come back to Youngstown then?
And that's how I met my wife, and we went together for a number of years, and after a couple of years they couldn't pay me enough money to keep me going. I stayed at the YMCA in those years, both the time I worked in the shoe store and the time I lived in Ashtabula. All the time I lived in Ashtabula, I stood in the YMCA, had a room there, for several years. The first year by myself, and then I was conned into taking in a buddy. Not a buddy, but a nephew of, what did I say his name was?
Pressman. Pressman?
Pressman, yeah. He was, he had come to Ashtabula and had gotten a job as Rob Nichols. Get it? A conductor on a streetcar in Ashtabula.
Rob Nichols.
Yeah. And after about 2 months of Rob Nichols, I didn't like buddying up with a guy like him, and I had a hard time, but I finally got him out of my room, and I lived in the continued to live in the YMCA. And then the shoe store was only paying me then. First I worked for them for nothing, then they started paying me $5 a week. And after a couple of years I found out that that just wouldn't make ends meet for me. I used to make a little money playing poker. And if it wasn't for that, why, and shooting a little pool. If it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have been able to stay at the YMCA with the $5 a week that I was making. But I was a cheater playing poker in those days. I couldn't cheat old grandma hollering today, but I used to gather a few extra bucks like that. And then I quit that job and picked up a job it was a small Army and Navy store in Ashtabula. And I picked up a job there for a few dollars more a week than what I was getting in the shoe store. And I kept that job for about a year. And incompatibility with the boss, and I left that after about a year. And at that time the Ashtabula had acquired a steel mill, the Ashtabula Steelworks steel mill, Ashtabula Steel Mill, Steelworks, Ashtabula Steel Company, I think it was called.
Do you have any idea what year this was approximately?
No, that I couldn't tell you.
In the early 20s?
That I couldn't tell you. That's where I don't have a, I'm surprised that I know this much. And I went to work at the, prior to that I had bought an automobile, believe it or not, a Ford, which a friend of mine, I had acquired a number of friends. This fellow's name was Mike Onofre, and he worked for the Ford company, the Ford retail, you know, the Ford Ford agency. Mm-hmm. And he didn't talk me into it. I wanted a car, going steady with a girl, And I was working at the steel mill. And I just don't know how I promoted it. I don't know whether I had any money in my pocket or not. But the going rate for a Ford coupe in those days, no self-starters, you had to get out and crank. Self-starters hadn't come into fashion yet, they were talking about them. Windshield wipers, you had to wipe, you'd reach your arm out or get out in front of the car and move the windshield wiper up and down. We made a couple of trips to Cleveland in the rain, and I took along a couple of passengers so they would help keep the windshield so we could view it. And I don't know how I acquired that, but it was a Ford. Brand new Ford. And but I did pay for it. I worked at the Ashtabula steel mill. I can't quite remember what the just what I did do there.
How long did you work in the steel mill?
Well, I worked in the steel mill for a couple of years.
And you come back to Youngstown after that?
Yeah, that was after that.
What occupation did you take up when you came back to Youngstown?
Well, having no trade or education of any... that is, an academic education of any kind. Having left school in approximately the fourth grade, what was the question you asked me?
What occupation did you take up when you came back here?
Oh, well, then when I come back here, then I got a job with Kroger's. Applied for a job and got a job with Kroger Grocery and Baking Company. And became a student manager for the shortest period of time that they possibly ever had a student manager, about 2 weeks. And the supervisor, either through desperation or recognizing my ability after a couple weeks as a student manager, put me in charge of historic 1906 Market Street. And we moved into a house on Glen Avon Avenue, a short two blocks from where I worked at the store, 1906 Market Street, which was right near the corner of Warren Avenue and Market Street, catty-corner from South High School. And worked there for approximately a year, and then was promoted to a supervisory capacity by the Kroger Grocery and Baking Company, and the position which I held for approximately 10 years. And shall I say I got fired, or?
Sure. Be honest.
Gonna make it a real criminal out of me. Well, I didn't get fired for very many jobs. I think that's probably the only one.
Why did you get fired?
I didn't have any jobs that I worked at. I worked for the Kroger Grocery and Baking Company as a supervisor for approximately 10 years, slightly more, became one of their top supervision personnel. Had my picture in the Kroger bulletin on at least two occasions with short items on supervision, store supervision. Supervised approximately at one time as many as 20 stores.
How big was Kroger at this time?
And the Kroger company at this time, the Kroger was quite a big concern at that time.
The individual stores weren't like they are today, though?
No, they were small stores. They weren't supermarkets like they are today. They were you would call them small stores. Not Papa and Mama stores. They carried a complete line of groceries, meats, fruits and vegetables, and so forth. But they weren't supermarkets as they're known today. And one of the largest stores I can remember being in my territory a part of the time, although I had a couple different territories. I would build up one and then they would give me another one to build up. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the one in Warren, Ohio, on Main Street in Warren. That was the biggest store that they had in those days, which would be equivalent to double the size of an ordinary store, a regular size store. And I supervised territory and what we call the South Territory, besides city territories that I supervised, the South Country. We called it at that time. It'd be Salem, Lisbon, East Palestine, a store in each one of those towns. Mm-hmm. Newton Falls. And I terminated my employment with the Kroger Company while I had that particular territory there.
Is that the time that you went into your own business then?
No. And the reason for my termination of employment, let it be strictly understood, was a superintendent who had just lately been promoted over me as a supervisor, who had been a supervisor the same as me, and he was chosen through the Cleveland office politics to become the superintendent, which I was in line for, of the Youngstown division, the Youngstown group of stores, the entire group of stores.
We're going to interrupt at this point to turn the tape over and we'll begin on the other side. This will signify the beginning of the second half of this tape, the interview with Ben Castor. After you left Kroger's, what did you do then, Ben?
Well, I left the Kroger's Asian Bacon Company. And naturally, was looking around for an opportunity that would benefit myself. And things were, to say the least, a little bit negative in those days. Jobs were unavailable, not in terms as we use today, but strictly unavailable. And I had two brother-in-laws. who found themselves in a similar position, being let out of the shoe business. They had been shoe clerks, clerking in shoe stores. George Faber, his one brother-in-law, worked for a shoe store, Leopold's on Federal Street, until about the same time that I parted company with Kroger, he parted company with Leopold's. For the same reason, conditions were such that employment was at a minimum, where the boss could get along without, he got along without. Where a corporate enterprise like I was associated with found they could do without, elimination was the key word of the day. Mm-hmm. And the other brother-in-law, George Cohen, was a longtime shoe salesman for Abe Brody, and the same condition prevailed with Brody. So the two of them got together and decided that as long as work was unavailable, they couldn't starve. And strange as it may seem, it would be easier to starve or fail going into business than what it would be, the chances were better that way than what it would be to try and get a job. The situation with such economic conditions that they considered a storeroom on East Federal Street near where George Cohen worked for the Brody people, and he was what is known as a sharpie personality salesman, and figured that he could pull enough by standing out in front of the store. If he would open the store, he could pull enough of Abe's trade going into Abe's store to get him started into his store. Believe it or not, that was in those days, to stand out in front of your store. Even Abe Brody used to do that, to agree to his regular trade and see that they didn't wander off into some other store. Shoes of $3 to $5 a crack. Good ones. So they got together and attempted to raise money to open the store. And they talked to this brown shoe salesman, whom George knew from the Brody Company. And Brody didn't sell the brown shoes. So he said it would be a good spot to open it, but they'd have to have a $500 order. I think it was $300 or $500 in order to get him into business. Stock, you know. Told him they'd have to have about that much. So this storeroom, second door from the Brody Company, and next door to the Navy Store, used to be a part of the Army and Navy Store, but things were so bad that they had moved all their stock into this one store, which then was right on the corner, or next to the corner of Walnut Street and Federal Street. And they had some chairs suitable for seating people in, and a couple of thin carpets in the store. So they needed, and shelving in the store. All they really needed to get going in those days was just the small amount of stock from the Brown Shoe Company. And they couldn't scrape together $500. Goldman said he would talk to the Brown Shoe Company and see if he couldn't get them to ship in $500 worth of shoes, and he would take $300 and ship them in $500 worth of shoes, and providing every week that he would show up there and get his hands on some money to ease off the big debt, see. So they opened the shoe store, the people's shoe store. No, not the people's shoe store. The Buster Brown shoe store. No, not the Buster Brown shoe store. Now, what was that? People's shoe store. And they were looking to get money off it, to borrow some money so they could send a business about. And I had just left the Kroger Company and was looking around for something, and had been looking for all 3 or 4 months. But I did have an asset. I had an asset that could be turned into cash. And this was the bonus that the government gave to the war veterans. They granted them a bonus, and my bonus came to $1,540. And I had bonus certificates. I think it was in the shape of two certificates. It was $725 each, which I could turn in for $1,450. I came in and put some money into the business. If I would go in as a partner into the business, it'd be cool. Made the mistake of not drawing up any papers. Of course, in those days, that wasn't really a decent thing. And they were brother-in-law. So I put in the $1,450, and that got the shoe store off with a good-sized stock. Paid off their couple $300 that they owed the Brown Shoe Company, and stocked up the store. And I was in the shoe business. The business didn't grow the way it should have grown. And they were Sharpies. They come from St. Louis, big town stuff. They knew all the tricks. Relatives in Youngstown, into my family, you know. But that has nothing to do with survival. It's dog eat dog when you get down to the conditions that existed in those days. Mm-hmm. So they started to make it tough for me. Well, to make a long story short, instead of going through the turmoil of in the family, I walked out of the business, which actually was my business. As I said, they only had $300 in it, plus debts of the shoe company, which my money had paid for. I made $1,400 and bought stock for. And I walked out of the shoe store
Business at this time, then?
And at that, shortly after that time, Dexter Blake and we were on the point of we were down to bean sandwiches, can of beans, and made sandwiches out of them. So he called one of my wife's relatives. We couldn't keep the furnace going. We burned up a lot of the supports in the cellar and lived in an ice house. The house still stands on the corner of Gibson Street and Florida Avenue, which we lived in, had a fireplace. And we kept warm by keeping the fireplace going. And some wood that we tore from the cellar of the home we lived in and from the garage. And one year, my wife's relatives, all fine people, none finer, British people from Massabula, back in those days, one of the cousins drove down to West Virginia and cut to sack a small ton and a half of coal, which helped us through one winter by putting coal in the fireplace and burning it with some wood. And I don't even really know whether, I think that my wife's mother gave us the money to pay him for the load of coal, which was a ton and a half. I think it was $7 or $6.
Well, how did you get into the grocery business?
Well, I'm trying to think now how the hell I did get into the grocery business. How I finagled that. We lived on the corner of right near Wilson High School. And we used to, incidentally, before I forget, we used to rent our garage, which it was a garage, a two-car garage, to kids riding bicycles from what have you, the street in Florida Avenue, to school in the morning. It was 4 or 5 of the bicycle in to Wilson School. Whether it was a high school in them days or not. And we used to charge them 2 cents a day to keep the bicycles in the garage. And we had, possibly 4 or 5. And you'd be surprised how that 10 cents would help us skin over to the grocery store and buy 10 cents of the cheese or a loaf of bread with a few other pennies that did.
Was it at that time you were still working in a shoe business at that point?
Out of work.
You were out of work at that point?
Yes. Out of work for quite a while there. And things got bad. Things were bad. Not as they're known today. With relief and and you name it, there's 15 different things I could name it, but food tickets and so forth and so on that people today have access to. In those days, it was have it or starve. So we had a friend in the neighborhood whose husband was whose husband was a furniture salesman for a furniture store. And don't make any mistake, that was a $10 to $12 a week deal there in the furniture salesman business.
What was this, not the union, was kind of date down or whatever?
Can't pin it down.
It was the 30s, 1930s, when you started?
I can't pin it down unless I run across some papers.
This was during Depression time?
Yeah.
Okay, well, 1930s then, which is...
And, they knew a woman that owned the store, a lady by the name of Schwartz, Bella Schwartz. Her and her husband had gotten a divorce just about that time. And, incidentally, he, married again shortly after that. That was one of the causes for divorce. He married a chick, a Gentile girl, and moved out into Poland and opened a little grocery store in Poland. I've often wanted to spot that place out in Poland, but it's always put my mind to it. She owned this store, was running this store, and she'd met up with a cousin of hers from Miami, Florida. I think it was Miami. And he was a jeweler, had a jewelry store. What kind of a jewelry store it could be in Miami, Florida, in this little yid? I didn't know it couldn't have been much, but it had a bigger appeal, I guarantee you, than running the couldn't be much grocery store in Katy Run Road. So these people, and I forget their name, I can't remember their name. With a boy, one of the boys became an insurance salesman in those days, too. But knowing that I had been with Kroger in the grocery business, had been talking naturally with Mrs. Schwartz, and trying to help Mrs. Schwartz out, you know, to pick somebody with Mrs. Schwartz's store, to shoulder the store off, start to promote how, what a big deal that would be for me to take it over, having some experience in it.
Yeah.
And it interested me. What wouldn't? Somebody would say there was a stock of bananas behind that building downtown, go get them and settle them out at a run. Trip falling over, run, get them. So I became interested, Esther and I, my wife and I, rather than starve to death. So just how I got possession of $1,000, I don't know, but it seems to me that there was a state bonus came through about that time.
A veteran's bonus?
A veteran's bonus. The state had allowed, how much it was, I wouldn't know. But it seems to me that was it. If the federal bonus went to my two Spicer in-laws who put me on the street flat, and it seems to me the state bonus, I can't think of whether it was $1,000 or $500 or something under that, what came due about that time was granted, and I was able to use that money. That is, we went down and we looked up a place. She took us upstairs. This is worth noting about. On Shady Run Road, up on the second floor, and she sat us down and sent down the store for blowing canisters. Boy, that was a treat for us. That was a sumptuous meal. And we were on the point of being conned into buying, taking over a grocery store, buying a property, not renting a store, but buying a property with two other houses on it. Get this thing is fantastic. You understand?
And here we were just so filled up with eating bologna sandwiches and a cup of coffee. And while we were eating them, the rain came up. And the roof started to leak. This happened later on, too. And we had a guy later, a Greek that was operates the Central Candy Company, met up with Donna.
That's your daughter?
Yeah, Donna from Florida.
Yeah.
And he was taking her out at that time, so. And he happened to be in one day, and we were sitting, this is going after I remodeled, we were sitting at the bar, and the same roof leaked. This was some years later, you see. Quite a few years later, the roof road had trouble with that.
Mm.
That's another reason why I was so anxious to get out of that goddamn store.
Well,
after 35 years.
Once you got into the grocery store.
Wait a minute, let me get some pleasure out of this lonely family.
Okay.
The people that were going into business, buying two houses and a third place to live in, you understand, and eating bologna sandwiches, which was out of our thoughts at the time, you understand. So we told her we'd take it. If she would take whatever it was I got, I just forget whether it was $1,000 or $800 or something. And she was so tickled, she was as eager to get her hands on that little bit of money because she had an opportunity, a man, a new man that she was going to marry, understand, in the jewelry business, in Miami, understand? This was her, ooh, boy, she was really fire. I thought we were flying, you understand? She was really flying at the beginning. Maybe. See, a conglomeration of events. That's taking something that flies over to the other side of the left. It isn't. And it's possibly looking to the other side. Your brain is real. Taking something that passes over to the other side. I mean it. In all sincerity. And, certain something passes over people at certain times, and the world opens in front of them, opportunities, the world, or vice versa. Well, anyhow, we told her we'd take it. I gave her what we had, I just forget what it was. I can't even remember exactly all of the records someplace up there, the price that we paid for the house next to the store. And the house below that. There were two houses and the store on this here lot shaped like that. The shady run and then around the corner,
Camel
out to a site and down on Camel Street, so, to the empty lot and back there, with a nephew of one of the people that I sold those houses to. Own that lot. There's a guy that lives down below that owned that lot. We didn't own that lot at that time. So we gave her the money, and we went down to the bank, the dollar bank, and told the dollar bank the chance to buy this piece of land and property with a store on it, and we wanted to borrow the difference, which was either $1,700 or $1,800, I forget which, but the balance due on it, or $2,700, I don't know what it was, the figures I don't know. She was able to, I was able to manage it. This was all of my money. And it's the money that I have my fingers into at some point or other. So she took us to her lawyer. This wasn't a transaction like my shoe store deal without legal proceedings and all that. I protect myself. But she
she wanted to protect herself, and she wanted to be there with us, so she wouldn't come and say, well, the roof leaks, what are you going to do about it? But, incidentally, when the roof did leak there, so we went down here, he's gone now, the name is Friedman. There's a picture of a grandson in the paper the other day, an attorney coming back to town from Cleveland, joining the law firm here, that was a grandson of the partner of this Friedman. He was in an office on the public square. And I remember going down there and signing the papers for Mr. Friedman. And he was supposed to get to the recess. Those are different things than that, but I might walk out and do it. So we came into possession of the store, the business, and the property. And went down to the bank and borrowed the money and paid Mrs. Swarthoff and signed the papers. And then we went next door and told the people there that they paid up the rent now. And both of them decided to move out.
Job at the same time you were running the store?
Yeah, for a year.
Yeah.
Well, anyhow, so, where did I leave off at?
You were saying that you'd taken over running at the door.
Yeah, we got, yeah, I'm taking over running the store. I was going one of them all that way, one of them all those two properties. So, we didn't have any trouble with the first one. We sold the first property next to the store for $2,800. This was equivalent to $1,800. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. Well, anyhow, we sold the first property, and then we checked that to the guy next door. No, then we took that money and went right down to Dollar Bank and paid them what we owed the Dollar Bank. They gave us a loan, you know, to pay off Mrs. Ford, the balance that we pay. I still can't remember the exact figure of what we paid her. And that's all in a matter of less than a year. And then we put we were smart kind of thing. We would have hung on. But we didn't, and those days were different. The reason for that was we wanted to get this thing paid off. We didn't know what income we'd get from the story and all, whether we could make it.
Yeah.
So then we put the pressure on this other car. And he was being moved out, and another guy moved in, and we got after him, and he bought the place, too. And I just forget what it was, but anyhow, the first sum, whatever it was, we took down the bank and put on the loan we got from the bank. And a few months later, 7 or 8 months later, we took the balance down and paid off the loan. Nearly the property owner.
Free
and
clear.
In fact, they were down at the Dollar Bank. They looked at me and they said, "Mr. Caster, this is the first time we've ever had a bank." I offered him 20%. Of course, he said, "I'm sorry that you're doing this." He said, "It costs too much, you know, and I'm going to take the money out." So, despite they made an offer. I have the money in the Dollar Bank, and the bank's been closed and broken.
Mm-hmm.
And the money was lost, but I thought it lost it all, but they did get some of it back.
How did you get it back?
Well, the government then went behind the bank, so you gave the bank money in which to open up, see? And the bank, it was optional to us. While this was in the works, whether we go to the bank and take 3/4 of what was in the bank, or wait until the government has passed the law and pay us our force, and some deal like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I grabbed the first money I saw. I think I got about $700-$800 back out of it. A little over $1,000 that I had in the bank. Well, anyhow, we paid off and we owned the property. And business was coming along, and the last next door was up, wasn't up for sale, but we went after it and bought the lot and back of the store, which we kept the property. We didn't need to be like a hole in the room, see. But in those days, it was the idea that all that somebody moved in and opened up an underground and that was it. So that's the reason we had that lot there. So we went into business, and thereby hangs the tale of real hard-headed, imaginative, and take a chance to make such place. Needless to say, I was a promoter. Believe me. Me.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that's the one wrong with me. And anything I need to. But those guys around there were all hanging around, grouping, and dying off. Never even know Mrs. Ford wanted to get it, and things were bad, so And I started right in and handled it. That's like a blow cough. I mean blow cough. And then that's the rip down my eyes up there. Just that night for the way out there and after the handbag for the big place. That was the handbag place. And higher and dirty clothes. 50 cents each, 4 cents each, half a mile from over the top of the big deal too. And sit up there and figuring out how to get the merchandise into the store that I was going to give away. And giving it away, not making enough money to let it be done to the reach the lights and so forth and so on. And the reach for it needs to be done. I don't know what you get, see. But anyhow, there's a real imagination. I'm sorry, I wouldn't say what a little thing goes. A lot of guts. And it's an incarnate. And the figure was so bad that the wholesalers, the big American company, used to come and kiss my hand to get the business. And it's an incarnate. And I never got too far behind them. And paying the bills, I never run bills of a couple $1,000 sometimes. He said he'd pick up for another blockbuster mob if it didn't do well. But he done it and gave credit, which everybody was cutting off people, poor people, you understand. And they were on release and going on release and work. The headline read, Credit the Chassis. Total to total, credit the chassis. Took everybody on. He wasn't still investigating or look up there with that sound or anything. We got hooked for tennis. But we had enough tennis, enough solidity, and money coming in, rolling in, and giving stuff away to the hotel, but to capture what was left to carry down and pay the higher, and because it's nothing for us, all right, and so on, and so forth. But we managed to do it. And got along, always in debt. And after it was just wondering how to spend money, but that's because it's nearly mentioned. If I feel like guilty, go to jail. And last time I left my mind one day, this is the soundest advice I can give to anybody who likes to look good. Credit card. Credit to the store? This is today. This isn't then. It was when I was in charge. Understand? I had to do it because it meant getting on a pay-to-go basis for my home needs. And she was building up under society. The veterans were fairies and all. And parties she was giving, you understand, and one from another. And credits came in handy, you understand. You had everything coming to you because you were the owner of the store. Living from the shop in Hitchfield, you name it. No, there were stories in those days. They weren't cheapy, believe it or not. Actually, credit men's stores were used to go in the Living Census with the high echelon, you know. Living Census comes and ran around with the cross the shoulder. Not in patent of the cross and it doesn't see what you have come up with a cross thousand, you know. So I think we were in getting those place. We were doing a little business and that's for the keep in debt. Get that expression? The keep in debt and the best circle. Getting no place. Strictly no place, understand, except being the so-called big chef. Well, this has got to stop. So I said, no more Livingston, no more Strauss's. I walked down to Livingston, and it's below in the Livingston. That's over there, $120, and $180. So that's no blood, I'm sorry, you're going to be on the cross-face. Down to Strasser's, how much do we owe here? $85, cut it off, and all of them left there, and there must have been at least 10. And it's only 10 accounts, but they've gotten very expensive on this one. Finished with this stuff, and this one. Put them all off, and from then on, it's a cash, strictly cash operation.